Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star two. Our first question comes from the line of Bob Cornell with Barclays Capital.
Yeah, thanks very much. You know, going back to just the Capital Finance and the, could you give us an idea of what you provided? Apologize for the granularity of this question and big picture quarter, but you know, in the commercial real estate loan book in the quarter, you know, what sort of provision did you take there? Was that? Can you tell us, Keith?
Sure, I mentioned it. You know, in the
well,
quarter.
Well, maybe let me simplify the question. What was the provision for loss? You know, in the commercial real estate loan book for the year, the charge in the third quarter was something like $559 million. What was that charge for the year?
Well, fourth quarter was $350 million after tax. If you go to real estate for the whole year, we started the year with $300 million of reserves, and we ended the year with $1.5 billion. So it's a $1.2 billion increase.
In the loan book.
That's correct.
Okay, and I guess the question is, you know, when you tick off all the pieces of Capital Finance, and the only piece you target as being a problem is the commercial real estate, you know, is real estate. So, I mean, how much realistically could the provision go up in 10 and 11, even given the cycle off the $1.5 billion that you announced you had in 9?
Well, I don't have a forecast for what the provision is going to go up. I can tell you that in December, when we showed you our outlook for 2010, and we don't have a 2011 framework here, Bob, for 2010 on real estate, basically we said that we thought you know, you could end up with losses and impairments being somewhere between $1.9 and $2.9 billion in the real estate business for 2010. So that's a combination of what we put on the books as provisions. What's left in the reserve will depend on the write-offs, but I think that's the range. You know, if you look at the business, lost $1.5 billion this year, and the range included in that was about $2.2 billion of losses and impairments. And then for 2010, we're basically estimating the losses and impairments could be $1.9 to $2.9 billion. I think it gives you a range for how to think about how we're thinking about.
Now, I apologize. What was the 09 summary and the 2010 summary for real estate, you know, losses and impairments? Just may have those numbers again.
$2.2 billion.
Well, I guess the point I'm getting to, Keith, is, you know, if you don't see a big increase in the losses and impairments in real estate, then out of the $11 billion in total provisions for this year, you know, and everything else coming down, why aren't we going to see a bigger drop in the overall provision for loss in Capital Finance in 10?
You know, I think if you look at it, we've tried to give you a framework based on the framework of stress cases in December that said the losses and impairments should be about flat in 2010. There could be an increase in real estate, and there could be stabilization in other places, and there could be declines in other parts of the portfolio. And I think that when you look at what we see on delinquencies and non-earnings, that's why we're basically cautiously optimistic. We think there could be some upside in G Capital, Bob, but you know, you're dealing with a call on future outlook based on what happens to unemployment, what happens to the real estate valuations, and you just got to be sensitive to that. I think we've given you a pretty good framework. I think we feel pretty good about it today, but you know, there's a lot of activity that'll happen between here and there.
Okay, it totally changed. Question. You talked about wins and big projects, Jeff. I mean, you had the Koreans out there want a number of nuclear projects. You know, I understand the pricing of those projects is pretty aggressive. I mean, you know, what are you seeing with regard to some of these big project wins globally, and are you seeing some pretty tough pricing environment?
You know, I think Keith said it, Bob. You know, I think the pricing and of what's going on in the backlog is still pretty attractive. You know, I think the numbers for energy was at gas turbines was up 1%. Wind was only down 1% or 2%. Meanwhile, our deflation is very strong. So, look, I think, you know, on balance, we won the deals we wanted to win, and the margins and backlog are still pretty attractive.
Good enough. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks.
All right, Bob.
Your next question comes from the line of Steve Tusa with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Thanks for that bar chart on 2011. Appreciate it. On the transportation business, When you look at what happened in the quarter, you said there was a $300 million charge. Is that just? Could you just explain the accounting and what you're doing there? And then you said, I think it's going to be flat next year. Is that sales or is that profits are going to be flat next year in transportation?
Sure. Basically, when you look at our services business, we have to look at the lifetime revenue that we're going to get from our customers. We estimate the lifetime costs over these 10 to 12-year customized service arrangements. And what we had to do was update those estimates based on the activity we see, the utilization in the fleet, the cost that we have as estimates of what it's going to cost to keep the fleet running with whatever the productivity and efficiency and guarantees that we may have made. And as I said, you know, over the last couple of years, we've done those reviews in aviation and in energy, and in 2009 we completed that review in transportation, and basically with 5,000 park locomotives and with the cost estimates of what we have for what we're going to need to do over time, we had to true up the cost estimate of the lifetime of those CSAs to about $300 million. That is not something that repeats. And when I said profitability for the business, we said they made about $500 million of op profit in 2009, and we expect the business to make about $500 million of op profit in 2010 on much lower locomotive volume deliveries.
Okay, so even adding back the $300 million, you're still going to be down, on a core basis, you're going to be down next year.
On a core basis, we'll be down, but a lot of that $300 million, some of that $300 million would relate to 2009 activity. Some of it might relate to prior periods as a cumulative catch-up, so hard to split.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. Shouldn't that be a tailwind to next year's profit?
It should be, but if you look at the locomotive delivery, Steve, you know,
that's the answer to my question. That's great. And then on the GE Capital side, you're still deciding to pre-fund, even though the, you know, capital markets continue to heal up. How much do you estimate, pre-funding in 2009, hurts your net interest margin? And then when you look out in 2010, how much do you estimate? I mean, I understand you're originating more than probably we would have thought here in the fourth quarter, so you're starting to put some of the money to work. But could you give us an estimate of how much pre-funding has been a headwind for the last, year and maybe in 2010?
Sure. I think we've, first of all, everyone's recognized you've got to carry more cash from a liquidity perspective on how you run the business. I think the extra cash, the calculation we have, is about $700 million of impact on GE Capital for the pre-funding and the fact that we're carrying a lot of cash. We've borrowed that money. We're not earning that same amount, obviously, on putting it to very safe and short-term places. So it's about $700 million. We're not going to continue to carry $60+ billion of cash. We're going to bring that down over time. But we've got quite a few debt maturities that we'll refinance, and in the first quarter we'll bring it down quite a bit, actually. But excuse me. So on a year-over-year basis, I think it's in the run rate. It could be a little bit better, but last year it was $700 million.
Right, and then one more question: just price cost. What was it in total for the company? The value gap in 2009, and what would you expect that to be in 2010?
You know, Steve, in 2009, it was I think was a very good year. It was probably in excess of $1 billion. In 2010, it'll be a couple hundred million bucks.
That's about
something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So
thanks
so
a lot.
Positive.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Terry Darling with Goldman Sachs. Please proceed.
Thanks. Just trying to gather up all the pluses and minuses versus where your thinking was in December. Very clear on GE Capital that you've gotten a little bit more positive there. Your numbers have come in. You've got better confidence there. On the industrial side, Jeff, I thought I heard you talk a little bit more positively about the value gap in your opening remarks, but I think the $200 million or so is kind of in line with where you were thinking before. On the industrial side, what else has changed, overall, in terms of giving you a little bit more positive outlook on the 2010 picture?
Why don't I, Terry, I'll do some, and then Keith, if you want
sure,
to kick
I'll give
in.
Sure.
I would say that the I went through the value gap on equipment. I think you got to like the services orders and the services margins. So another part of the overall profit drivers are there. So I think that's quite encouraging. I think the second thing is the healthcare performance in the quarter. As Keith went through, it's just broad based both geographically and technically. So I think that's a plus. And then the third thing I would say, Terry, is that we did a lot of restructuring in the quarter, and as we're able to do that restructuring. that allows us to improve cost base in 2010 and beyond. So those would be the three things that I would talk about. I'd say the last thing is the orders in general were slightly better than probably we had thought about even in December.
Sure. Maybe I can I'll add a little bit of framework in terms of last year at year-end. We talked about the commercial deliveries, Terry, that we had, and I'll lay those out by business. So if you look at aircraft in 2009, we had about 1,939 commercial engine deliveries. The 2010 plan has 1,846, so it's down about 5%. You know, in 2009, we had about 915 military engine deliveries, and in 2010, it's 874. It's down 4%. So the outlook in aviation is for equipment to be down. I think you've seen the spare parts order rates, and those are going to be a key determinant of how aviation performs in 2010. For locomotives, you know, it's a big change. I think in 2009, we delivered 511 locomotives. In 2010, right now, the team is planning on 250. It's a very difficult environment in terms of equipment. I think the outlook for 12 and 13 looks great based on environmental standards that are going to come into place. But, you know, 2010, they're really going to be dealing with a lower volume outlook. And then energy, 2009, we had about 134 gas turbines. 2010, the plan is somewhere around 117. And wind turbines are about flat. We had 2,633 units in 2009, and we got 2,616 in 10. So, you know, the units in energy are a little more stable. So that helps to put a little bit of framework around what we think the volume is going to be in the major equipment drivers for 2010.
That does. And Keith, on the aviation services and spares in total, that whole piece of the puzzle, are you expecting profit down in that piece as well, did you say?
Not in services in total. I think if you look right now, for the year, the commercial spares orders were down 4%. And we've got a lot of it's been a tough year for aviation, right? But there's some positive signs in the first three quarters of the year. Revenue passenger miles were down, freight traffic was down. If you get into the last quarter though, the last 3 months passenger traffic was up 0.3, 0.6, and 2.1%. Cargo grew almost 10% in November. Load factors have held up around 75%, and I think the main positive for us in aviation, if you think about it, you know, we've got about 23,000 engines. We actually had 1,000 net adds in 2009 because our engines are going in, and they're not the ones being retired. The less fuel efficient ones are the ones being retired.
Terry, the price will be up as well.
Okay.
Catalog price is up 5%, so
that helps.
Helpful.
I think services,
okay,
in general across the infrastructure businesses will have good revenue and op profit growth next year.
We're counting about flat overhauls, about 1,600 overhauls.
And then, Keith, just on restructuring expense, can you give us the all-in dollar number for 2009 and kind of where that's pegged for 2010? And it sounds like you may move that number higher over the course of 10, but maybe just give us the starting point thinking there, please.
Well, in 2009, we spent 20 cents in restructuring and other charges. It was pretty split between tech infrastructure and capital and C&I and energy and about $100 million in MBC. For 2010, we've got that down somewhere less than half of that. You know, we have to see. We'll see what the projects are. We have pension going up. Pension should be up, and I think this is a little less than what people thought, about $1 billion pre-tax in 2010 versus 2009. That includes the impact of the discount rate, and it includes the impact of the losses in 2008. That's about 7 cents after tax, so that's a good item. And then that gives us a chance to be able to be flexible as we see good projects to be able to do restructuring, and we don't have a final number peg, but we do have the opportunity to do more restructuring in 2010 to continue to work on the cost structure.
Okay, and then just lastly, thinking on industrial tax rate for the year at this point, 2010?
Our outlook for 2010 would be that the industrial tax rate will be in the low to mid-20s, somewhat similar to this year, maybe a little bit up from this year.
Thanks very much.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of John Inch with Merrill Lynch.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, guys.
Hey, John.
Hey, Keith, just to follow up on the restructuring question, what sort of a restructuring contribution are you guys expecting in 2010 based on the activities that you did in 2009? And the follow-up would be just, are you expecting any kind of material compensation headwinds, perhaps because you have to restore merit pay or anything like that this year?
You know, John, I think all the compensation stuff is, you know, factored into the way the plans, you know, that we've outlined. I think on restructuring, we basically get a two-year, you know, a two-year payback. So, you know, we ought to get $1 billion of benefits or something like that. I would say beyond that, you know, if you go back to 2007, 2008, we also had pretty good restructuring in those years. And if you think about, you know, just base cost between, if you go from 2008 to 2010, our overall base cost will be down $5 or $6 billion, you know, from four, you know, something like that over that time period. At the same time, we'll have increased R&D 7% in 2009 and probably 15% in 2010. So,
okay,
those are just some of the dynamics.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. What's, by the way, Keith, what's the outlook for, or Jeff, what's the outlook for the gas turbine business in the U.S. And possibly the wind business as well? If you kind of frame it between what happened this year, your orders next year, just how do you see that business shaping up?
You know, I'd say there's a macro and a micro there, John. You know, I think the macro story is that gas and wind are the fuels of choice, right? And so there's always a lot of interest from the U.S. utilities around both of those businesses. And then it comes down to, you know, the demand for electricity was down in 9, it's probably flat in 10. You know, so where will the excess capacity be needed? And then the third part is just, you know, how many more projects like Cadence will we see vis-a-vis U.S. Focus on green energy and renewable energy? I think there'll be some of those in 2010. So I don't know, Keith, would you add to that? I think that's,
That's right.
We like being in gas and wind. We think long-term in the U.S., those are going to be the fuels of choice.
But it sounds like it's still going to be an international story, at least for the next couple of years. Is that
you know, at least for 10, that'd be my sense, yeah. John.
Can I ask you just, you know, it's been reported in the press the proposed financial crisis responsibility fee. You guys didn't really talk about it. I don't remember what new service quoted possibly $800 million could be ascribed to GE Capital. What are you thinking about that, or is it too soon to sort of even talk about it?
Well, I'd say it's a little early. You know, I think there's a lot of activity that still needs to go on that. Based on what we understand, we from the press conference, and then there was a clarifying call this week, for GE Capital, if this were enacted exactly as it's proposed, we would estimate that it'd be about $500 million after-tax impact on GE Capital Corporation for a full year. You know, our understanding is it's effective after June 30th, so on a half a year it'd be about 2.5 cents if it were enacted exactly as proposed. And, you know, our expectation is that based on the outlook we have that, you know, we'd still be able to stick to our framework if that were put in place that way and still have GE Capital about flat.
Okay. Maybe just lastly, Keith, if I look at your $11 billion of net income this year, I think about 35% came from capital tax credits. Where do you guys stand in terms of the ability to maintain those credits, call it in 2010, 2011? Like, I'm presuming they can still be held relatively intact as long as there's offsets. Is that fair? Otherwise, on paper, it kind of looks like these could be some significant headwinds.
No, that's true. We don't anticipate in the framework that Mike Neal and Jeff Bornstein laid out in December the tax credits being anywhere near that level. You know, we had about $3.8 billion of tax credits, as you said, in GE Capital this year. It's not only it's from our structural benefits we have, but also the fact that we have the losses in GE Capital, and it's the benefit of GE and GE Capital being together. We're able to offset those losses with our GE industrial income from a tax perspective. We expect in capital somewhere around $2 billion of tax benefits in the framework that Jeff Bornstein laid out in December, so it would be substantially less. And we absolutely believe that we will be able to continue to utilize all those benefits with the consolidation of GE Capital without creating any deferred tax assets or anything like that. So,
with spillover into 2011, theoretically?
Well, you know, theoretically in 2011, you're going to be dealing with pre-tax profitability in GE Capital that will end up with, you know, you're still going to get tax benefits from our structural benefits as long as the legislation that's in place today stays in place. But we expect substantially more pre-tax, which would, in some ways, lower the overall tax benefit at GE Capital, John.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Steven Winoker with Sanford Bernstein.
Good morning.
Good morning, Steven.
Could you all just clarify total marks and impairments? So not the charge-offs, just the marks and impairments for Jex for the quarter.
In the fourth quarter, the marks and impairments were $430 million after tax.
Okay, and real estate.
$315 million
of that. Okay, just so I'm clear on that. And then secondly, in the wake of the Capital One call last night. Sort of raised the question of the increase in the 166, 167 reserves coming up, magnifying the sensitivity of loss provisions to improving economic conditions down the road. In other words, the reserve release for private label credit cards, as you think about it going forward. How are you guys thinking about that?
Well, I think Jeff Bornstein laid that out pretty clearly in the December. We can go back to those charts. I don't have them in front of me, Steve, but... the way 167 is going to work is we're going to put those receivables back on our books. We already have the retained interest on our books. We will have a charge to equity in the first January 1 as part of the accounting change to reflect the reserve posting associated with those receivables. And then we'll earn on the full balance as we go forward in the year that will more than offset the fact that we don't have securitization gains. So I think it's in total for the year it will be a slight net positive. We've already included, from a capital ratio perspective, risk weighting on those assets in our ratios that this won't have a big impact on the ratios in terms of capital. We've accounted for those receivables in what we deal with the rating agencies and what we've thought about in terms of our capital ratios for the year for G Capital. So, Jeff showed you what the impact was on those ratios, but
I think the question was also more the magnitude of the coming release. But basically, you're saying it's no change from what Jeff shared with us.
That's right.
Okay, and then in terms of the healthcare business again, I'm just trying to get my head around the sustainability of those margins going forward, of the incremental or the decrementals and the business. Can you just lay that out a little more in terms of not only did you see a really strong quarter, but your expectation for sustainability as you look through 2010?
You know, Steve, I think that the demand was so broad and deep. You know, in other words, so many different geographies and so many different product lines that, and the back quality, the backlog was high, so the backlog build that, leads me to believe that the market has at least stabilized and might be improving, and I think we've got a nice lineup of products. I think there's still, there's still some uncertainty around reform and what it means and things like that. But if you go back to the meeting you guys had with John Dineen last fall, the average age of the installed base is old. You know, our offerings are strong. I think you have to at least be guardedly optimistic about how this business can perform in 2010.
There's certainly been some market paralysis based on all the discussion in the U.S. about what's the reform, what are the changes in reimbursement going to be, what do hospitals plan on from a budgeting perspective. We certainly saw some of that free up with more clarity in the fourth quarter, and I think that just certainty around what the regime is going to be is a real positive as you look at the U.S. specifically.
I think
the
on
global
the
growth, the global
and
growth was great.
Working capital standpoint, I think the team is executing better, and so I think our ability to sustain margins and cash are, I think, quite strong.
Yep.
Okay, and then finally on the capital allocation discussion that you put out there, in terms of the cash you're going to put to use, can you maybe, Jeff, provide a little more strategic color again about how to think about what you will define as attractive in terms of acquisitions, so that investors, We won't be surprised as you announce things over the next year.
What I would say is that the cash builds during the year. I think any acquisitions we do will be bolt-ons, and they'll have a good way to execute towards a 15% cash return by year five, with experienced management teams and clear synergies, both on cost and revenue.
And when you say bolt-on, sort of the the, you know, that means in your parlance, smaller than what?
Oh, look, I just, you know, I hate to limit it, Steve, but I just don't see us doing a, you know, a big deal. I think they're going to be, you know, reasonable size, from a couple $100 million to maybe a couple billion in that frame.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Nigel Coe.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Nigel.
So it sounds like you had a fairly huge month in December for the major equipment orders and probably the CSA as well. How do we interpret that? I mean, is this just customers holding back on their budgets until the last possible moment, or, you know, is there a real improvement in the end markets you're seeing? And maybe then, has that trend continued into January?
Look, I don't think if you look at the long cycle businesses, there's anybody looking at their budget in the quarter when you buy gas turbines or aircraft engines. I mean, these are long term projects that people plan for, and we're a piece of the scope. So I think if you look at the energy business, you look at the oil and gas business, those are based on economic activity globally. You know, aviation, again, we're dealing with a phenomenon where we had such great orders over the last 3 years that the airframer backlogs are pretty much full through 2012, 2013. And then finally in healthcare, I think you see a little bit of both, as Jeff said. I'm sure some people had budget money and they spent it, but that's not a driver of the overall orders when you look at major equipment orders for the company, Nigel.
Okay, so the uptick we saw is that's a real uptick, and it should be sustainable.
Well, there's some real global growth.
I think there's some real global growth, Nigel. I think, you know, we've tried to be in 2009 and in 2010 appropriately conservative about, you know, what we see and when we see it, and maybe it's just some of that.
I think the comparisons back in 2007, 2008 were just really a little lofty.
Yeah.
So I think these also, we look, while there may be a negative V on some equipment here, Nigel, these are very healthy levels for us to operate the business at when you look at these order levels. We may have a negative V, but we can run the business profitably at these levels.
Okay, sure. And then on the financial crisis responsibility fee, first of all, Keith, you mentioned net of tax. Has that been clarified that will be eligible for tax deduction?
There was a conference call this week with the administration where that was clarified publicly, is my understanding.
Okay. And then, you know, if it does come to pass in its current form, I mean, what are your options in terms of limiting that? I mean, could you reorganize GE Capital offshore? Do you shrink the balance sheet more than you're currently guiding? I mean,
I think there are incremental things. I think, first of all, there's a lot of work to do in terms of what's the basis for this fee. Is it, if it's a TARP, a loss recovery, is it on financial services and auto? You know, so there are some macro questions that I think need to be answered that's above what we're thinking about. I think at a GE level, you know, some of this right now, we've just calculated off our total liabilities except for our Tier 1 equity and our deposits, FDIC deposits. You know, we've got TARP. We don't have any TARP, but we do have TLGP debt. You know, we paid a fee on that. Does that get included in the base of liabilities or not? And then finally, the size of GE Capital. Obviously, we're going to continue to shrink GE Capital. As we bring GE Capital down, that will benefit us. So, but again, I think those are around the edges. I think there's a strategic question about what comes out in the president's budget, what are the Congress pass, and then how does it get implemented by the regulators. Those are, you know, there's three steps here that we're going to have to work our way through. We've given you, if nothing changes, based on our understanding today, without deducting anything out of the liability bucket other than what's been defined, you know, five cents on a total year basis, 2.5 cents in the second half is our current estimate.
Okay. And then just a couple of quick ones here. First of all, you know, if I back out the $300 million service true down, I guess, within transportation, it looks like your underlying margin is about 24%. Is that right? And, you know, that's pretty remarkable at these kinds of volumes. I mean, is that sustainable?
I'm not sure if you back that out. Is that out of the tech infra segment in total?
That's within transportation. So if you add back the $300 million, I think you get about a $150
million. No, that's also in revenue.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's also in revenue. I think if you do it that way, you'll get closer to their 17-18% margin rates.
Okay, okay, fine. And then if you can just call out what the pre-tax was on the FANUC gain.
It was a couple hundred million dollars.
Okay, great. Thanks, Keith.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague with Citigroup.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, very good. Hey, just a couple questions. I don't recall ever hearing, one of these adjustments in service like this. If it was, I don't think it's ever risen to this size. How frequently do these reviews take place?
Well, first of all, in the size of transportation, it's more significant. That's why you're seeing it here in the quarter in that business. You know, we basically over the last 2 years done a complete review of all of our service contract businesses. We started in aviation, we moved into energy, and we completed those. Today, the process is on an annual basis. Every contract with a customer that has a CSA with us is reviewed. Usually, it's about a quarter of the contracts each quarter, and we'll do a complete update of our long-term forecast of what the total revenue over the life of the contract and the total costs over the life of the contract are. And if it needs an adjustment, we make those adjustments every quarter. So they're more in the actual ongoing operations of aviation and energy. They're every quarter. In transportation, our practice was not to do it on a contract-by-contract basis until this year, and in the fourth quarter we said we've got to standardize this across the company, have every business do it the same way. And in 2010, transportation will do about a quarter of its long-term service contracts every quarter and review them the same way the rest of the company does. So we've been going through this for a number of years. We haven't had in a business on a relative basis something of this magnitude, but we have had adjustments in both aviation and energy. Some of the adjustments in aviation were back in some of our corrections we made 2 years ago, Jeff.
And I guess the thing that it just raises the concern is I just think about kind of the demand destruction in electricity demand the last couple of years. As you know, has there been pay-as-you-go headwinds in energy on just lower gas turbine utilization? In fact,
there have been, and on the costs of the overhauls and everything. I mean, if you look at the last several years, if you go quarter by quarter in aviation, we've had periods in every quarter where we've had a little pressure in service costs in energy. We've talked about it. So, yes, absolutely, every quarter those are looked at and adjusted.
And just moving on, I think price was addressed a little bit earlier on. Just looking at my notes, I think you guys said wind price was up 10% in Q3, and now it's down 2% in Q4.
Well, you're dealing with revenue. The price in the backlog was very strong. The orders price in the fourth quarter was down 2. So, you know, the backlog pricing in wind is very strong. The orders pricing for the year is about flat in total. In the quarter, it was down about 2.
Okay. So you still have positive price coming through backlog, probably.
Absolutely.
And our material deflation, Jeff, is probably 4%, something like that.
For next year. Now we got about 1.5% this year.
So, you know, again, I think the value gap will remain positive.
Great. And then just on commercial spares, you know, actually very strong performance, down 4, and, you know, for the year, I think you said. Obviously, you had very good utilization relative to what was being parked and what was not being parked. But was there any comparison issue there that, you know, creates any particular headwind into 2010?
No, I think if you look at the numbers that I'm giving you on spares rates, they take out the impact of any one-time order with AVL or anything like that. The fourth quarter spares orders were $19.5 million a day. That was down 11 in the quarter, but, you know, for the year, as I said, down 4 at 19.4.
And does the guidance in any way anticipate or allow for potential gains on security in NBCU? Would those be restructured away?
No, I don't have anything in the guidance on that.
Yeah. And then finally, Jeff, I think you addressed it in December, and actually I'm just looking at my notes and I don't have it clearly. You know, on your last slide, you talked about you know, driving people to, you know, to compensation as it relates to these metrics. Obviously, all we're seeing on the slide is kind of the triple plus for 2012. But what is it exactly that people will be compensated for, and how are they being measured?
You know, Jeff, we have a 3-year long-term incentive plan, and so, you know, they've always been aligned with earnings per share growth, the return on total capital, cumulative cash flow. And so those will be the metrics that are the backbone of it, and they will, you know, they will be reflected in the team with the double plus and the triple plus.
Are we going to know what those are, though? Is that going to show up in the proxy? Are we going to be able to kind of, you know, track and measure the company relative to that so we know how you're doing?
You know, I haven't looked at the proxy yet. We haven't historically done that, Jeff, but, you know, again, I want to make sure you get a sense that the people are very much aligned with what I would say would be a, you know, strong performance on earnings per share in the future.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jeff.
Our next question comes from the line of Lee Rosenbaum with Loomis Sayles.
Keith, can you just refresh me in your comments when you were discussing the income maintenance agreement? Did you cite $2 billion in 2011? Did I hear that correctly? And if so, what was your prior thinking on that number?
Well, yes, that is what I said. You know, we forecast as part of the stress cases in March that, you know, the 2011 could be anywhere from $2 to $7 billion. Today, we're recommitting that, you know, our current outlook based on the G Capital plan is somewhere around $2 billion, and that
okay,
would be put
great.
in 2011.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Feldman with UBS.
Good morning.
Hey, Jason.
So just a couple quick ones here. Enterprise Solutions, you know, obviously profit was up a lot, but was that entirely attributable or almost entirely attributable to the gain, or is there something
right, the
else improving there?
No, that's right. The FANUC gain's in there.
Okay, so that is, so basically it wasn't
a couple,
doing
a couple,
all that much different.
A couple hundred million dollars, otherwise it'd be close to flat.
Got it. On finance, you know, a little bit higher level question, I guess, but you're talking, I think, a little bit more optimistically than you had been about the commercial side, the commercial lending and leasing. But it sounds like you know, consumer is more stable, not necessarily down next year, but fairly stable. Typically, you know, earlier last year, and certainly when we talked to our finance guys, you would expect the consumer business to turn around faster, and the commercial tends to be later cycle. You know, is there something different going on there, or are those dynamics different this cycle, or is it just your business mix? Any thoughts there?
I think we're just looking at unemployment kind of staying in around 10%, and that's kind of what keeps the delinquencies and keeps the non-earnings where it is. So it hasn't crested over. I think if you look at the commercial side, we actually see non-earnings go down by $600 million in the quarter. You see delinquencies starting to roll over. You know, basically we've dealt with the restructuring on quite a few of the early companies that went into distress as part of the recession, and that's starting to, you know, show some signs of improvement. So
but we see both positive next year.
They're both positive.
Yeah.
Okay. But was I wrong to say that you perhaps were more optimistic on the commercial side or seemed a little bit more positive there?
I think there's more visibility on commercial outside of unemployment on consumer.
I think consumer actually was slightly better this year than we thought it was going to be. And
sure it was.
Finished the year. You know, so I think actually in some ways this is playing out. Some of it started in the second half of the year on consumer and will carry over. And then the commercial, I think, gets better during the year.
Okay. And then last one, you talked a little bit in terms of cash deployment on the kind of criteria that you might use for acquisitions. Are there particular, you know, kind of broader business areas that seem more or less attractive going forward?
You know, I think we've just talked about infrastructure in general as being the sweet spot of the company, and that's where the capital will go.
Okay. But within that, just very broadly, you know, not one particular part relative to the others.
You know, it's just our little secret.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you very much.
Great, Noelle. I think that's the list of questions. We've gone through everything. Just to close out today, the replay of today's webcast will be available this afternoon. And, you know, Joanne and I are always available to take questions. Just to announce, our first quarter earnings release will be held on April 16th, so please reserve that date. And thank you, everyone, for your time today.